it would have been very interesting to study some French or German mystical text, but this kind of a short introduction was just a way of giving a little punctuation for this widespread mystical literature during two centuries. And my purpose would be for this last meeting to try to give some possible criteria for recognizing or analyzing what is a mystical text as mystical. I have a distinction between three aspects of the problem. The first one would be that the mystical text is a kind of meta-linguistic of the language as spoken. The second one would be a kind of musical mathematic or possible musical mathematical interpretation of this language. And the third one would be the very strange and interesting relationship between body and meaning, this circulation of body text or text body. But before beginning, I must specify I am analyzing literary mystical text and not the mystical experience. I consider the literary or linguistic aspect of a mystical text. I don't want to specify a mystical discourse by its exteriority. For example, an experience which would be outside the text. I specify the mystical discourse in itself as a mystical text. It's a mystical experience. Otherwise, it's not a mystical text. But maybe, and it's evident, there are many other kinds of mystical experiences in the society, and many unknown mystical persons, but we can't judge or analyze them. My point is that we must recognize the mystical text as a text, and not by the ideological definition of a supposed experience which would be before, behind, outside the text. Because this definition of an experience behind the text would be only our ideological building, imagination. And there are many examples of this construction. It's to say that the question deals with this textual experience of the language, a mystical experience of the language. And in this perspective, the first and probably the more fundamental problem is the fact of this question concerning the language. And I told you that the flag, the permanent index of this mystical literature during two centuries was the expression modus loquendi, a way of speaking. Probably they were right, and we must take seriously this central point of mystical debates, discussion, theoretical treaties, and many other things. I will present concerning this first point, metalinguistic studies, just some bare formulas which concerning the mystical prose or poetry as a kind of a point of departure for beginning or final debate. First point, in a mystical text, the language is used and analyzed as speaking, to say as performed. And it's the first essential question. Is to say that the text concerns the language itself. And you remember the six functions analyzed by Jacobson concerning the language. For example, the phatic function is, for example, when I tell hello, an act of presence, of interlocutor, or there are different other, or the poetic function, to say when the language is taken by its materiality, its aesthetical value as something which is a physical thing. And there is also, for Jacobson, a specific function called metalinguistic. There is a metalinguistic exercise of the language when the language is speaking on itself. For example, a dictionary. When I am telling this word means, and I give another word, it's the language speaking on itself. It's a meta linguistic function. And in mystical text, there is something which is permanently metalinguistic. It's as an a priori, it's something which is strange because the term mystical concerns a secret. Is the meaning of the Greek term mystikos means secret. And the first and natural interpretation is the fact that the mystical text concerns something which is silent, secret, within the language itself. I think it this problem deals with the nature of language itself, and each mystical language will concern something in a language which is its own secret, a kind of a linguistic silence which would be an essential, fundamental quality of the language itself, and not something behind the language. And this essential thing, essential silence or secret, is, I think, the language insofar as speaking. Speaking is essentially an act, a present act. And it's the question of the language as existing. There are many, since Benveniste or many others, other analyses concerning this point. But the language can't express this act of speaking. Each expressed thing of the language is a content, but the act of speaking is not, can't be a content. It is to say that this act of speaking or being spoken can't be an enunciated statement. It's the secret which focuses a mystical text. And this secret is not an hidden or decipherable content. It's not a content. It's not a content which would be hidden by the text. It's the act itself of speaking. And it, the first paradox, that what is ineffable in the language is the language itself as speaking. It would be interesting in this perspective to recognize something which is a kind of technical, literary technique or ruse. You know, for example, that there were many very interesting studies concerning the romantic illusion, showing that the deconsideration of realistic reference, of referentiality, was a way for over-evaluating the text itself. If the referentiality is decreasing, the text itself is increasing. In a mystical text, we have exactly the same, technique. You have many criticisms concerning the vanity of things, the world is vanishing. It's to say that more the world, the realities are vanishing, more the text is has a great value. My point, but it's just an horizon of the question, is the fact that essentially the actor of this strange mystical scene is the language itself. And the philosophical problem, but we will see it a little more precisely, is the fact that if there is no language without speaking for the mystical experience, is to say, without the hypothesis of God, the language itself may be considered as God, or God as the language, but the language as speaking. A second point in this metalinguistic consideration is the fact that we will see other aspects of this question. The language is received as spoken or speaking by a mystical text. And this speaking or spoken language is considered as spoken by an unknown speaker or locutor. The mystical text permanently insists, I, who is I? But there is a linguistic I. I don't know who is speaking or what is speaking. Finally, it's not I who speaks. Something, for example, it's very frequent with Juan de la Cruz, no sé qué, I don't know what, speaks before me and precedes me. And the term I it would be or is only the witness of something which is speaking within the language. We may take some particular characteristic of this question of behavior. You know that in very long and fundamental German philosophical tradition and mystical tradition, there is this use of S, which is a neutral that. And you for example, the good definition of our question would be that speaks. But in English, it's not a very good word. There is no philosophical tradition for concerning that. But in German, you may tell, es spricht. And you have from Meister Eckhart until Heidegger a permanent philosophical tradition concerning the use of this neutral that, es. For example, Nietzsche tells, es denkt, is not, I don't think, but that thinks in me. Or you remember, for example, the very interesting philosophical comment made by Heidegger on the usual expression in German, es gibt, which is the equivalent of there is. But there is no linguistic equivalent in English or in French for this neutral subject of operations. And for example, in some cases, it's very interesting because in each language, there is an effort for guiding, for example, that in English or aquello in Spanish towards the German use of est. For example, the comment made by Juan de la Cruz on the aquello, this or that, in the 38th strophe of the Cantico, is a way of conducing aquello towards something which would be the German S. And I think that the point is we can't know what is speaking, but there is something S that which is speaking. It happens. And this neutral speaker would be the founding and authorizing speaking, something which is maybe the language itself as a kind of anonymous subject. There would be some very interesting equivalent, for example, in the Marguerite Duras style, where it's not S, because in French it's very difficult, but the plurality of subjects, of a locutor in the same statement is the equivalent of the German S, that. Second aspect of this question of speaking, is the fact that the mystical text is, and I think it's a theoretical consequence, a system of answering. I was telling that in Juan de la Cruz we find the poem as a system of echoes. I think it would be, unfortunately, we have no sufficient time for analyze to analyze the declaratione, the comment, but I think it's exactly the same thing. And the global structure would be, for example, the equivalent of what was in the medieval tradition responsum, is to say the way of speaking in a fragment of a received text, a fragment of a biblical text, which is the element for speaking between us or with God or receiving God's supposed language. But the essential nature of the linguistic element is to be an answer, to answer something which is speaking. And each element in this mystical text is a speaking echo of a preceding and unknown speech act. And I think it's also the typical definition given by this mystical literature of the soul. The soul is an echo. The space where something is speaking because something is answering a precedent speech, even if we don't know what kind of speech. And it's a very interesting, for example, in this literature to see the circulation of the term soul. For example, when Teresa de Avila sent her autobiography to a friend, she wrote, "I sent you my soul." And it was effectively, because it's exactly the same structure. This with two very interesting elements, but the relationship of a space with a sound. There is no echo without a particular place, even if it's the same linguistic element coming from another voice. And the soul, or the mystical text, is the space where there is an answering to a precedent voice, but a voice without a known source or origin. And by the generalization of this experience, the mystical text has another very typical feature is the fact that the mystical text answers with the same sign, the same sound, the same word, which is perceived as a speaking but unknown voice. It's to say that it's the same linguistic material which is supposed to be the voice of a call, for example, and the voice of an answer. The same sound, the same word, is both its or his voice and my answer. It's a structure of an echo. The same linguistic act or gesture means you speak and means I answer. But also it's a reason why this I is very suspicious without certainty. The essential is the act of speaking, which is yours and mine. In this perspective, it may be interesting to see the permanency of this structure. I studied, for example, some Greek first mystical text of the 3rd century, and particularly a beautiful text narrating the story of a mad, or supposed to be mad, woman, the first of the long series of fools for the Christ, but the first one was a woman. And she was a servant in a great feminine republic of 400 women working within the kitchen. And there was a revelation for a monk, a very famous monk, and he went in this republic for telling that the best one is this unknown woman walking in the kitchen. And he spoke, and the only answer of this woman was the repetition of the terms used by the monk, which would be the equivalent of a kind of angel unveiling the beauty of this unknown mystical person. And I think we have this procedure permanently because, for example, when the Cantico, Juan de la Cruz Cantico, is analyzed, we can't forget it's a repetition of the Song of Songs. It's an echo, but an echo which a wonderful poetic value, because the Song of Song was perceived as singing and speaking. And the comment organized by Juan de la Cruz is also an echo of his poem, but in another space, for example, in the anthropological scholastic conception elaborated at Salamanca, there is an echo of this poem, El Cantico, which was already an echo of the Song of Song. And you know that in an exegetical point of view, or not exegetical, but technical point of view, the Song of Song is probably, it's very difficult to know, but probably a poetic echo of military songs, love songs in the Egyptian army at Alexandria. It's to say, it would be the same thing, but with a longer story, that the Cantico, Juan de la Cruz poem, as the echo of this popular song he listened to in the street. In a different way, we may find the same system. For example, there are some very strange, curious poems constituting a correspondence between Fénelon and Madame Guyon. And they have exactly the same rhymes, the same terms, the same words, but not the same use. The one is the echo of the other one. Very strange literature. Fundamentally specified by a kind of translation, but a very specific translation. And we may recognize something in this linguistic procedure, which is the matter of many philosophical considerations. For example, in Meister Eckhart, in the perspective of an ontological linguistic, the interpretation of this phenomenon is the center of a phrase, of a statement, is the verb, the act. The personal pronouns turn around. They are only related to the verb, which is the act, and which can't be appropriated by a subject. To say that there is no stable subject for an act, for the verb. For example, to pray, I may tell, I pray, or tell, God prays me. It's the same thing. What is stable is the act. Consequently, there is parallel between the fact that no subject, even God, can be stabilized as a subject or as dominating a complement. The complement becomes a subject and the subject a complement. But what is stable is the act. And essentially the act is the act of speaking. We have, by this way, a second paradox. The same linguistic sign or sound may be the question and